April 2nd, 2024 marked the second day of jury selection in the Chad Daybell trial. We had some different set of circumstances today with some of the jury not showing up in the morning, and the defense was also on a different tangent. He was no stranger to more antics, as we saw yesterday. Also, there was a juror with an interesting job title, let's just say, and John really wasn't having it. I did a recap video on day one and will be recapping the jury selection and trial until it's officially over. I'm Linda with It's a Crime, so now let's get into it. The jury trial started April 2nd at 9:29 a.m. at the Ada County Courthouse in Boise, Idaho. Like day one, they started a little later than they were supposed to. It was supposed to start at 9 a.m., but started a half an hour late, and it went only until 1 p.m. It wasn't as fruitful, I want to say, as day one, but they also went through two rounds of potential jurors on the first day. Now, in my day one video, I mentioned not knowing one of the members on the prosecution team or not recognizing him, so I want to acknowledge him. And he is Fremont County Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Roxy Wixom. I love his name. As mentioned previously, on the prosecution team, there's Lindsay Blake, Ingrid Beatty, and Rob Wood. And of course, on the defense, John Pryor, and sitting beside him is Chad. And yes, today he had his murderous colored red tie on. I had wondered how long this took to wear. They only had one round today of 16 jurors, but two of the 16 were late. One was 30 minutes away at the start of jury selection, while one was said to not be even responding to phone calls. So I wonder what happened with that. And I remember the judge stating yesterday that there could be fines. I'm not sure the full details of what's going to happen, but it will be interesting to see how that's handled if that one juror didn't even phone back. That'll be interesting. And if you know more about that and fines, let me know about that below. So they go through the process again of voir dire. However, side note, the courtroom says it's voir dire, which is incorrect and for some is really tough to hear. It's like when we were watching Letitia Stout trial and you had to hear the defense attorney call Letitia's last name and he's representing her, Miss Stouch, and it's Stouch, which was really brutal to hear. And I guess that was worse, really, but anyways, voir dire means to speak the truth, and the simplest definition is the questioning of potential jurors during the jury selection process, and the questioning is primarily done by the attorneys to prospective jurors from the jury pool, although the judge may also ask the jurors questions, which they did. It's a weeding out process. Now, up first was Lindsay Blake. Rob Wood was first up yesterday talking about brutal honesty and what that means, but today was Lindsay's turn. And both Rob and Lindsay use analogies to get the point across and make things clear, which I think is pretty effective. On day one, Lindsay brought in an analogy about cheesy eggs and sticking to a recipe for it. Today, she said if she wanted brutal honesty, she'd go to her little niece for it, who tells it like it is, and she talked a little bit about that. Now, I caught a little tidbit from John Pryor, who referenced brutal honesty. He was talking to the jury, but he made a little jab to the prosecution team about that, and I'll show you that in a minute. But Lindsay had another analogy for conspiracy and what qualifies that as to, you know, what an agreement is. And conspiracy is two or more persons to enter an agreement in an act. And she used brothers as an example.
And again, you previously heard the judge give an instruction regarding conspiracy and talking about it being an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. So I'll tell you, I have some older brothers, and two of them were pretty close in age. And so my mom will tell stories about the two of them because they would get into shenanigans together. And the two of them, one of the things that they would do is the older brother and the younger brother would get together and they'd come up with a plan. And oftentimes the older brother wanted the younger one to carry it out first. So they came up with a plan to jump out of the barn door. So as part of this, they come up with the plan, they go into the barn together, they climb the stairs, and the younger brother jumps out. Well, he gets hurt. So the older brother doesn't follow. But they both had talked about going to do it. They both had the intention. So ultimately, they both were involved in that. So when we talk about a conspiracy and an agreement by two persons to commit a crime, you'll get instructions regarding the agreement and what qualifies as an agreement and what an agreement actually is. And again, that will come from the court. But you'll also, it will talk about the only one person in that agreement has to do something that is referred to as an overt act. So only one person has to do some act to further that. Does anyone have a problem? Because you were, let me back up a little bit. You were also instructed by the court that there are co-conspirators that you may hear about, and you're not to worry about what's going on with them. But what you will hear evidence is of some of the actions or the allegations that the state has, and you'll hear evidence regarding those actions of the other co-conspirators. Does anyone have a problem knowing there's an agreement and only one person has to do an act in furtherance? Does anyone have concerns that person A may not have done the act in furtherance of the conspiracy and person B did? Does anyone have a problem then essentially holding person A still accountable? So like the brothers planned, both of them climb up the stairs, but only one jumps out the window. But they both planned it. They both were going to do it. Anyone have concerns about that at all?
Now, on day one, when defense attorney John Pryor talked about it being an agreement, one of the questions was, is it an agreement if someone was tricked into it? I talked about that in the last video. And then John Pryor asked the jurors about if they wanted to be there or not and to be honest about it. But he made a jab also at the prosecution because they called it brutal honesty. He says he finds it strange that they call it that. In fact, later on, he said he would use a different word because brutal sounds so difficult. Now, have a listen to the jab he makes at the prosecution.
The stress of having to be here, and I can see it on his face. There's concern. And so I really want all of you, and the state talks about brutally honest, and I'm going to touch on that a little bit later, but I need all of you to be honest with me. And you're not going to hurt my feelings. I can't speak for the folks over here, but I know that no one's going to take offense to that because this is a serious case and it's a complicated case. And we need all of your attention. We need it to be focused on this. And it's not going to be imputed to you that you're not doing your civic duty. And it's not going to be suggested that you aren't, you know, faithful to our country or all of those things that are at least important to me, but important to all of us. That's not the case here. But in all seriousness, I guess we have to really be honest about that. I'm not going to use the words brutally. I find that a strange adjective to attach to a statement of honesty, but that's their issue, I guess. But again, I'm going to ask this. Is there anybody who just feels that what's going on in their personal life is so profound, and so complicated, they just don't think they could, in all reality, do this very complicated job? Hold up your cards, please, if you feel that way.
What are your thoughts about that? Let me know below. Now, yesterday, Lindsay Blake asked the court for John not to refer to the prosecution team as these four prosecutors, but the full sentence that was made was these four prosecutors apparently have an opinion. And today he changed his tune and he called them these folks to my right, which is kind of funny. On another note, at the very beginning of questioning, he said he was distracted today, which also was funny because he did this at Chad's preliminary hearing. He said he was distracted. He says, I'm sorry, you know, Your Honor, I'm hearing voices in the corner, which again is funny since Chad hears voices, right? Now, during voir dire, there were 14 left out of the 16 for the day because of the two at the beginning who one was late and the other one was not answering. But during group questioning, there were three females and three males that were excused while one male went on to the individual rounds. And those excused were for basic reasons of hardship and one had a migraine. They talked about how she gets Botox for them. But the gentleman that stayed was juror 1004, which was really interesting as he is a police officer and he's actually a patrol officer. And he said his wife is a police officer as well and he has three children. Judge Boyce kept him and put him through the individual questioning round and shortly after John asked to approach the bench. And the juror also said to know Ingrid Beatty, one of the prosecutors. John went hard on this officer, as I'm sure you can guess why. Now, next, John brings up a fishing analogy, and he takes it way too far. Even Lindsay Blake, who's super smart and intuitive, asked to approach the bench. They go and chat with the judge. The judge comes back and tells John to refrain from any hypotheticals, and he's concerned that he's going beyond the scope. Have a look.
Now, this prosecuting attorney talked a little bit about conspiracy. Is there anybody here who doesn't know what the term agreement means? Please raise your hand if you know what an agreement is. Okay. Please raise your hand if you don't know what the term agreed means. A-G-R-E-E-D. Does everybody know what agreed means? Okay. I'm going to give you a little hypothetical. I'm going to inject one of you in this hypothetical. Okay. And I haven't pinned on juror 951, so we're going to pick on you a little bit. Is that okay? And if it's too much, tell me, please. Okay. This isn't to put you on the spot. We know each other. Let's assume we know each other. And I go up to you and I say, you know, juror 951, it's a beautiful day out today. I'm going fishing today. Okay? And then I go off and go on a fishing trip. And then suddenly, I look over across the pond, and you're there fishing. And I didn't know it. Do you believe that's an agreement to go fishing together?
Yes and no.
Okay. And why do you say that?
Yes, you had mentioned that you're going to go fishing.
Okay.
But I've never agreed to go fishing with you.
Okay.
And so if you were to be there fishing and I just happened to come along and I start fishing across the pond, that wasn't an agreement to go together.
Right. So you, in that instance, you would say there is no agreement. Okay, and juror number 922, you got an interesting nodding. And I guess I'd like your
I appreciated juror 951's answer of both yes and no, but
okay.
Recognizing that, I don't know, that kind of social situation is awkward in one part, and to have an agreement, you really need to talk about it beforehand.
Right. And when you say you need to talk about it, does it have to be laid out specifically?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. And what are your thoughts on that, juror number 752?
There wasn't an agreement.
Okay.
They just showed up at the same time.
Okay.
For instance. But yeah, nothing was agreed.
Okay. And let's say as a result of the fishing, let's go a step further. As a result of this wonderful fishing trip that I went on, I look upon across the pond, and the other person fishing, and we're going to let you off the hook today. Sort of, that's a terrible expression, but we're going to let you off the hook today, juror 951, and we're going to say it was somebody else, okay? And let's say that as a result of both of us being out there fishing at the same time, I'm not catching any. But boy, the other person across the pond has a stringer full of 10 trout. And juror number 1057, the limit on trout that day was only 6. And unfortunately, that person was breaking the law. And along comes the fishing game officer. And this fishing game officer says, you broke the law and I'm giving you a citation. Okay. In that situation, am I responsible for a citation as well because I'm fishing on the other side of the pond?
I do not think so.
Okay. During 1048, should I be getting a citation because I was fishing on the other side of the pond?
No. If you didn't reach your limit or exceed your limit, then no.
Well, what about just the fact that maybe we were both there fishing together and there may have been, we may have, whether there's an agreement or not, does that make me guilty?
Judge, may we approach?
Yes.
Later, John also brought up the topic of affairs, and he went on to ask juror 1004, again, the police officer, to talk about affairs and if people lie or are untruthful in relationships or in affairs. He did ask other potential jurors as well, but honing in on this officer. After the group questioning, they went on to individual questioning, and they had 7 jurors left. Now, interesting notes. Number 752 juror is a chief financial officer. There was some back and forth, and he mentioned kids. John wanted him gone, but he stayed on. 951 is a female, and she worked at Idaho Corrections. Apparently, she said there were conversations at work, but there was a lot of back and forth on that. It was like, oh my gosh. Anyways, but they ultimately kept her. Another notable person was juror 1057. She had an experience with her brother-in-law who was burned in a fire, and she said it might be difficult for her even though it's been 30 years. She said she remembers it and remembers the smell as well. And of course, Pryor wanted her off, obviously, because Tylee was burned and dismembered, and she ultimately was excused. And as of today, we are at 20 out of 50 jurors to choose. I made a mistake in yesterday's video as we were only at 16 and I counted way more, but it was late. But we're at 20 as of today. And once they get to 50, they will begin to narrow it down to the official 12 with 6 alternates for a total of 18. And we may just get to those 50 by Friday. What do you think? Now, my thoughts, today was a really short day. John is amping up his behavior though. There were times where one would think that the jurors were actually the ones on trial and were witnesses. I don't think it's appropriate for what he's doing in court. That's just my opinion. Let me know what you think. I think we see very professional behavior in the prosecution throughout. That's not me being biased. That's really how it is. And with John, I just feel like it's so extreme and it seems like he is manipulating. I really do believe he's manipulating these jurors right off the hop, and we haven't even got into trial yet. This is just jury selection, so it's interesting. So court will start at 9 a.m. tomorrow, and I'm guessing it will be more like 9:30. In all the hearings, it seems that Judge Boyce starts a little bit late, but this morning it was the jurors who were late, so we'll give them that. If you haven't seen day one, check it out right here and John's antics, and check out the playlist as well. We'll see you on day 3.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.